Welcome back, listeners. On this episode, I spoke to costume designer Deborah Scott about her work on Avatar: The Way of Water. Scott is an Academy Award winner for Titanic, a BAFTA nominee for Titanic, and a two-time CDG Award nominee for Avatar and Avatar: The Way of Water. This year, Scott will be honored with the Career Achievement Award at the CDG Awards.
What are we talking about today, Jackson?
Oh, just a little movie called Avatar and Titanic.
That thing.
Just small fish in a big pond, right?
Yeah, I guess, huh?
How does it feel? I mean, just to have, the reception that it's had and to have the legs that it's had. I mean, it's a very typical James Cameron-esque.
Yeah.
8 feet legs that just keep growing.
I know everybody wants to always like naysay, like, oh, it's never gonna, you know. So I think it makes everybody nervous, but then, you know, it comes out and people are really amazed by it, I think. And it feels, that part feels really, really good, you know, that it's actually pleasing to people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's always, you know, there's lots of, anybody can make a lot of criticisms of anything, but when you have that many people enjoying something and probably going multiple times, it's very rewarding because you feel like you've at least, whatever your small part is, that you've given the audience and the fans something tangible, you know, something that they, I've had people come up to me and like, I've seen it 5 times. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's 15 hours of your life.
Yeah, but the amount of hours you've spent on it, I mean, I can only imagine.
Yeah, we spent a lot. It was a long, long time, but those kinds of movies, you know, they take animation takes a long time in itself, and this is way beyond that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was so special to watch. I watched the first Avatar prior to seeing Avatar 2 the day after. And I mean, I'm not saying like a night and day difference, but just the world, it was so bolstered and it was so fresh and it was so alive. Like it was like revisiting like a favorite comfort food, but it was like 5 times, 10 times better. It got so, everything felt more lush and more present and alive. And I loved that.
I'm glad you thought that. That's wonderful. I mean, that really was the intention, you know, that we, especially in the visual fields like mine, that we sort of even just explode the world to a point where, you know, we had that wonderful starting place of film one. But it's kind of pales in comparison, even though that was wonderful. But the technology is so good now that it's almost as if anything I could dream up, they could accomplish for me in the digital world. So, you know, it was an incredible challenge to do that, but I didn't feel hemmed in at all. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in film three, like if the technology gets even more incredible, or are we sort of, Jim thinks like, I heard him say like, he thinks we're kind of at a holding place, but then the movie's going to be even more amazing, right? There's more stuff and yeah.
So. And more worlds, a new world to,
yeah,
to tackle. So that's exciting.
Yeah. 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 We have 2 new clans in film 3 and, you know, a lot of different visuals for the audience. Cause you know, I don't think Jim's never going to stop growing. He's never going to stop kind of increasing the value to an audience member.
Mm-hmm. And I would be remiss if I didn't congratulate you, one, on your CDG award nomination and the Career Achievement Award that you'll be receiving. How does that feel to be recognized by your peers like that?
I mean, it's very, very wonderful. It's nice that they changed it from lifetime to career achievement, because you don't want to feel like you're the oldest person left, you know, but it's nice after I've been in the business for so long now, and, you know, really 40 years plus a little bit. And it's really wonderful to receive that. And especially in a year where I think myself and my team pioneered some new avenues for costume design and costume designers and costume people. And, you know, that there's a lot of new doors opening, which I think is, you know, we'll see what happens with the actual nomination. I think it's really wonderful to be recognized because it's been an ongoing project to try to get people to understand what we did. Mm. But when they do, I think it's going to be very amazing and rewarding for many, many costume people.
Agreed, 100%. And I mean, it was very interesting. In preparation for this interview, I was watching your acceptance speech at the Academy Awards, and to see someone like Ruth Carter also being nominated in that same year and seeing how she's nominated this year again, it's beautiful to sort of see that longevity and the career that you two have both had. And I loved that was for a Steven Spielberg movie, and Steven Spielberg is obviously nominated this year. So it's beautiful to sort of see that arc that sort of goes across time. And
it's an interesting business that we can have that kind of longevity and still stay very relevant, because it really is about, it's, you know, you don't do it for yourself. Ultimately, you're making these stories and creating these visions to put it out there to audience members and fans and things like that. So you have to stay relevant, to still be working that many years later. And that same year of Titanic, Sandy Powell was nominated as well. And I think Ruth Morley, I'm not sure who the other one was, but you know, we've all been here for so long, and it's wonderful to see new people coming in. Mm. You know, we need that, right? We need to sort of, you know, keep the ball rolling and encourage the filmmakers and the costume designers that are coming after us to have the same kind of aspirations that we did. Mm.
And I mean, speaking of very quickly of Titanic, I mean, it is having its re-release 25 years later now. And
I'm kind of excited about it. I'm kind of excited.
I'm thrilled. I was, I was probably 3 when the movie came out, and so I didn't get to see the film at all on the big screen. And so now, for the first time, instead of just watching it on the largest screen possible in my house, I can finally go to a theater, like a regular theater goer, and see it. And what do you hope that people take away from, I mean, just the reissue, the resurgence of it? I mean, it's obviously a timeless classic, but to have it be re-released again is just, I mean, that's a marvel in and of itself.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, the whole 3D, 4K stuff could be very interesting, that, you know, all of these advances really change the visuals of something in some small way. So I'm kind of curious to see how that is, but I think it'll be very interesting to see how the public responds, how much money it makes at the box office, and just showing, like, is it really something that, and it seems to be, but is it something that people will return to as a classic going forward in the future? And being part of that, and especially with the Academy Award for it, it's such a marker, you know, the fact that I still meet people. We were at a book signing the other day for Avatar. So many people were excited about the re-release of Titanic. And that movie has seemed to really touched a lot of people, you know, that they're very, very kind of just attached to it in a way that, and I think it's also, honestly, people really remember the costumes. Mm. It's like they have, you know, because maybe it's because you've seen it so many times, but it's wonderful to belong to something that has, again, captured the imagination of the world, really.
Mm, absolutely. And I mean, sort of converging these two worlds, something that I found very interesting in rewatching Titanic, Avatar, seeing Avatar 2, can you talk to me about this, when you're building out on a community-based level, a familial base level and then on an individual base level, because I see that across all of James' films in terms of Titanic. I mean, you see the community that is on the ship, and then you go down to the familial level and the individual level, and that only gets greater over time in terms of Avatar 2, where there's obviously so many different families and so many different families, so many more individuals. And I'm just wondering how you start from the top and then just build down sort of that funnel.
Yeah, it's an interesting process. And I think, Jim has always said, like, something like Titanic, where you have history, you have an actual historical, event, and you put that kind of with a disaster and all the things together in that story, you sort of automatically understand it. However, doing something like Avatar, because you are absolutely world building, right? We're starting from scratch. It's an imaginary world. So it gives you kind of boundless places to go, but you have to try to define it, because it can't just be everything and anything. And I think the first thing is the world building, like understanding, which also, on film one, I came in kind of a little bit into it. So there's a lot about that movie where I was reflecting on it today, thinking about talking to you and saying, thinking like, oh, there were a lot of things we didn't really know. We didn't really know how it was going to go or how you were going to proceed. And it started the same thing with film two, but we had this amazing foundation of what people expected from Pandora, right? So having that and expanding upon that, knowing the place with the script, like how the humans were going to come back and interact, and how the other clan, the ocean clan, was going to come into the story, which just expounds it. But trying to find, like, when you think of, it's almost like you have to think of it as a real thing, right? Mm-hmm. You have to say, okay, Pandora is very real. Mm-hmm. Because I have to know what Pandora is before I can design anything for the people that belong to it. And we created a new, the character people and the creature people created new bodies for the people. They weren't exactly the same, but there's a lot of things that tie them together. Mm-hmm. So just trying to find, like, just like on Earth, in our Earth, the reality of what is real in human beings around a planet that is vastly different from place to place. Mm. It's that, right? But we all inhabit kind of the same body. We might have different color skin or eyes or hair, but you find the commonalities and you find the differences. So that's where you kind of go from world building to clan building. And as a designer, as a costume designer, I also started, it's almost like I have to start it. It's like a little bit of a sandwich, because you start very much with character building. The script lays out your characters. There were characters that repeated from film one. It, some time had passed. So the understanding of where those people were now, the space that they were occupying in the story, was super important, and what their journey through that story was going to be. The addition of the children, the other clans and thing, all that, So as you're kind of discovering the characters, you're delineating the clans. So the clans are almost come in the middle. Mm. But the character building is the foundation. And that's the most important thing, because we can understand the world as a whole, but what operates on the ground level is what gives it the foundation for the story and for the look.
Mm. Yeah, and that's what thrills me about the next part, is to see how much they have grown into their next sort of, not iteration, that's probably not the correct word to use, but
their next self,
I guess you could say.
Yeah, because the characters are going to follow, we've done a lot of film three already, so the characters are going to follow a trajectory that we knew when we started too. That's the wonderful thing about having the sort of sequels written. That we knew the kind of what the end game was there, but the addition of the exploration of what two other clans in Pandora really, it just keeps exploding the world. So it's like us being living in the US, and now we get to go to, you know, on film two, we got to go sort of down into Polynesia and all this greater part of the warm world. And now we're going to go someplace else. You know, we don't know if we're going to be in Africa, where that's totally different, or Norway, where that's totally different. So that kind of exploring of the world is kind of endless in a way. Yeah. You know, you're like, oh my God, there's so many lands here. And I don't think we knew that from film one. You kind of just get this idea that it's one people's and the humans coming. Mm. So.
Yeah. And what does Pandora mean to you?
Like in what way?
Just as a place, as a place that you've somewhat inhabited in a way.
Yeah. Well, I think it represents a land of marvelous opportunities and kind of endless creation, and a place for, as a designer and there for an audience to sort of explore, right? It's that exploration that we got to do, that you're not, you know, it's wonderful to do a period film like Titanic, but you do have a template. You understand the world already with a little bit of research, but that being on Pandora, which I always say, we're on Pandora, it's very hot here. And, you know, you kind of just become so familiar with the people that to me, when at a point, I forget that they're 9 foot tall and blue. Mm. I look at them as individuals with all the struggle that any actor would have. Mm. And because the performances are so real, because they're real, you know, it's like, they're real because they're real. It seems so obvious, but you know, people think it's, oh, it's animation. No, it's not. It's performance capture, where you're getting like everything, even down to the smallest little twitches in your face. Mm. So the Pandora represents to me also the ability to bring those performances to life in the same way that you would in a completely live action movie.
Mm. And I mean, what excites you about this convergence of technology and animation and costume design? And what is your hope for the future with this?
I really hope that, I mean, what excites me about it is, you know, I grew up on animation. I grew up on the simplest forms, you know, watching something when you watch something now like Snow White, a very early, all the Disney movies that sort of pioneered so much of that world, that you realize that this is no longer like that. It's not animation at all. It's whatever the word is, it's almost like we need a completely new world, a new word to describe it, because you have all the technology, you have all this, like, is it a visual effects movie? Is it a CG movie? Is it a, you know, there's all these things that make it what it is. So it's surpassed kind of what we expect from animation. And therefore the requirements of getting it to be have the depth of the visual language that we want it to be, they're just, it's literally the doors are kind of opening into this whole new world. We're building, as we're making the movie, we're building the technology along with it. The visual artists didn't know how to, and that was the plus of, for me, the excitement of coming from the absolutely hands-on, I'm gonna make these costumes. These costumes can be worn by a person. They're absolutely 100% real. And then being able to follow it through this process that is new and unique. And I'm not sure if I'm not the first person who's ever been allowed to do it in the way that we did, with the depth and the precision and the chain of command, all that it takes to come with a final project. Because if you're every day looking at footage along with the people who are making the footage, it's just a very different way to make a movie. It's brand new, and I think that it has endless possibilities for not only designers, but it takes so many people to make a movie. It takes so many artisans. It takes so many creative people. It takes, you know, people who can, for me, can work with their hands, people who can draw, who can, so it gives this ability to just even have a greater understanding and a love for the movie making, and the fact that you might meet somebody who's an incredible macrame artist who never thought you'd ever get to work on a movie. Mm. You know, you that to make this new stuff for characters, and yet they do get to now in this particular world. So the worlds can be endless, and the detail to make it as real as Avatar Way of Water is at this point, because when you're, the intention is really so that when you're watching the movie, that you could feel like you can actually touch those people. Mm. Right? They're three-dimensional. They're absolutely live action at that point. And that's a quite a process that I think is a very exciting thing to try and teach other students and designers and people coming up in the business.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, it's immersive. I mean, I the 3D, 4D, 8DX, whatever they want to call it, that confuses me so much. But I mean, even just on its regular surface, on a 2D level or IMAX, I mean, you still get that immersive feeling. And it's wonderful to just be able to just plop yourself in this world and just find yourself in whatever way that is, through character, through themes, or yeah, whatever. And it's miraculous. And I think you have all accomplished in terms of the immersion aspect, whether that's, yeah, whatever sort of format you're seeing it in. So I do.
Yeah. That's wonderful. And I also think along with that is the, you know, that the simple minds kind of want to discount the fact that you're, oh, it's just done in a computer. Well, you know, it's like, absolutely. If you're going to make something really real, you need human beings. And it's almost like this movie, instead of eliminating like humans in order to make the movie, thinking that machinery can make the movie, is the it's the polar opposite. It's the polar opposite. You have many more people involved in a hands-on way to make something that's this kind of, in this digital format. So it doesn't replace humans. It actually needs more. It needs more real people working on real things.
Mm. Yeah, no, and I've loved just been watching your Instagram and your sort of the posts that you make from the behind the scenes. It's like a little museum gallery, and hopefully one day we'll do something like that.
We're really trying, because I think it has value for the process. Mm,
absolutely. And I mean, final two questions for you, if you don't mind. What do you take away from this set of films?
Wow, that's a tough one, because it's at this point for me, it's very difficult to separate the process, right? All that, it's because it's a, also most movies you work on, if you work 6 months on a movie, that's a long time.
Yeah.
This was years, right? So you're very fully engaged and immersed in the process. What I'd like to take away from it is the ability to, and I think it's just going to take another minute to kind of, so that you sort of forget what you did and you get to sit in the audience and see it again and appreciate it for the first time with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. So that part's difficult right now. And also because now we're starting on, you know, back into film 3 soon. You're like, oh my gosh, we just got out of Pandora. Now we got to go back. You know, it's like, give me my breathing mask. Get me back in there. I think it's a hard takeaway. I'm very, very proud of the work. I'm really proud of my team, because people had to really hang in there and care for a long time. Yeah. And to gather associates and work coworkers around you that then become friends is pretty wonderful. So it's a very, what I take away from it is this incredible personal experience, more than, you know, I want to get back to having the joy of just sitting in the audience and being surprised.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, I mean, final question for you, if you could sum up film three in three words, what would those three words be?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think it's going to be stunning. It's going to be surprising. It's going to surprise people. It's going to be very imaginative.
Perfect.
That's kind of boring three words, but
no. No.
hopefully it'll be like, oh my God, what's happening?
No, I love it. I love the imaginative sort of idea of it. So I'm just grasping onto the little straws that I do have that I can carry forth until the next one's released.
Well, hopefully it'll only be a few years this time.
Yeah. Not 10.
Yeah.
Exactly. But Deborah, this has been such a joy to chat with you. And I just thank you so much. I mean, your career, I mean, just being able to go back and look at your filmography and to see so many of the films that have just shaped my love of film. And I mean, aww, even just, I mean, some of the major ones. I mean, it's so wonderful to have been able to chat with you this afternoon.
Oh, thank you very much. It's really been my pleasure. And I'm very grateful that there are people like you out there who use their eyes and their ears and really love the filmmaking. So it's been quite the journey, I gotta say.
Thank you all for listening. This episode was edited and produced by me, Jackson Vickery. Graphics were done by Dylan Michael. And the opening and closing theme were done by Sterling Gavinsky.